Welcome into the latest episode of the Irish NFL Show. As we reflect on Combine Week, the various different stories, we're going to do a bit of talking joints. And talking joints it is. It's delighted to have first-time guest Justin Pennick join us on the show. Justin, great to have you on board.
Fellas, thank you for having me on. I'm honored, I mean, to join the list of names that have joined this show. So thank you for having me. Let's talk some Giants.
And of course, one of our co-hosts, Kieran Boyle, joins us from Florida. Kieran, delighted to have you back on. It's been a while. We haven't done anything since maybe those crazy 1 a.m. ones when we're reflecting on Sunday night games.
Right. Yep. February's a sad month in the world of football, but I'm really happy to have Justin on. I'm a huge Talking Giants buff and listen to them all the time. Little prop for Justin right there. next time I'll get Bobby Skinner on. But yeah, it's great having Justin on. Let's talk Big Blue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's gas. Everybody this week who you speak to, and I think you touched on it as well, just on the podcast with Bobby during the week, it's not so much about the combine with the players. It's more about what information comes out at the press conference. I think everybody quite switches off once they've heard the bits of nuggets of information. And Joe Shane, shall we say, he gives little nuggets of information and allows you to interpret it whatever way you want. I think we'll start with Saquon, because I said earlier in the week, even to Kieran, that the game, it's a bit of a game changer. Everybody could have foreseen the cap being at around 240. We're now at 245. And I think it's probably changed the whole strategy within the organization, because he seemed a lot more upbeat on Tuesday around the potential re-signing of Saquon. Do you go with that, or do you think we're still in a situation where it's a bit precarious and who knows how it will play over the coming weeks?
No, I think publicly what Joe Shane says about Saquon Barkley, and this was even the same thing last year, right? You know, well, we want Saquon back. We think the world of Saquon. And I think that's true. Like, I think in a perfect world, I think, you know, Joe Shane's not lying. He does want Saquon Barkley back, and I think he does, and I think the organization does think the world of him. But I think where Joe Shane differentiates, especially from, you know, the previous regime and the previous GM, is they're not going to overpay for Saquon Barkley. And, you know, I don't know if there is even a realistic number. And even if that realistic number is coming, you know, coming at like 10, Saquon Barkley's not taking less than like that franchise tag, especially from what he got last year. So, and that's where I think Joe Shane, that's where they may value Saquon Barkley. So, I don't think the cap number being inflated and being brought up, while it's great news for the Giants, it's also great news for the rest of the NFL as well. And I don't think that's going to change the Giants' process in a way. I think the plan is still in place. And I think that plan is kind of putting, I know we're going to maybe talk about McKinney, but I think that plan is putting McKinney at kind of like that priority number one. And I do think Saquon Barkley is going to wind up hitting the open market.
Yeah, and it's funny, I saw on Bleacher Report, it was either today or yesterday, Bleacher Report had predicted Saquon is going to sign for the Giants 3 years for 27. And I said to myself, I don't see that happening. I listened to the show earlier in the week, and when you're talking about Saquon, and it all signs point towards I wouldn't say an amicable split, but it looks like for the betterment of Saquon's career, it's better off for him and for the Giants that he finds a new team, whether it be Houston, some team that needs a high impact running back. I just don't see, and Joe Shane will say Joe Shane things, but I just don't see Saquon coming back. And I think it's, you know, unfortunately for Giants fans, and I know he likes to, you know, Saquon likes to be the ultimate kind of company man, but I just don't see it happening. And long story short, it's going to be best for both worlds.
Yeah, I agree.
Justin, a quick one for you. We're obviously at the Super Bowl, and I met Brandon London, who you'd know well from doing obviously the coverage, the official Giants coverage. But he said that some Giants fans will reflect on the years and say, it's okay if he moves on, because he's had so many losing seasons, very few wins. We had the one good season a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And time for him to go and produce in a successful team. Do you think if he was to move away, the Giants fans would reflect on the time and say, great player, didn't work out because of the circumstances beyond his control with Dave Gettleman, et cetera. And it's just a case of we wish him well. Or do you think there'll be a little bit of Giants fans thinking, we really should have done that deal last year to secure him for the future?
I think there's going to be fans no matter what, if we let Saquon Barkley go, that are going to always, even if the Giants win, I think they're always going to be like, we should have kept him. Because, I mean, let's face it. You look at the highlight tape at Penn State, right? And you look at the anticipation that he had coming out of college, and then you have the rookie of the year and you have those highlight plays, and you have what was really awesome running back, like jaw-dropping stuff from him in 2018 and 2019. And man, it, you know, it just hasn't been the same since, and a lot of it is kind of out of his control. But in terms of how fans will look at it, if the Giants win, I think the majority of Giants fans will be like, you know what, Joe Shane, right thing to do. Joe Shane was able to take, you know, maybe the $10 million, $11 million, $12 million, whatever dollars. Maybe we're able to invest that in an offensive lineman in free agency, or we're just able to kind of remove from our brains that the Giants need to build around Saquon Barkley. And instead of building around Saquon Barkley, the Giants need to build a running game. Like, I think that's the mindset of, you know, not just building around this player or this running back. The Giants just need to build a more well-rounded complementary offense that we have not been able to do since Saquon Barkley was drafted to the Giants. So if they're able to do that stuff successfully, then I think a lot of fans will look at it and be like, all right, you know, the divorce happened and it was time. But if they don't win, and especially if Saquon Barkley goes elsewhere and he's successful and he does win, then it'll look like a bad outcome.
Kieran, a lot of running backs on the market. Like, we did a podcast earlier today in which you're talking about Austin Eckler, Tony Pollard, Derrick Henry. I mean, the list is endless. I can't recall an offseason which we're going into where if you include Saquon, there's so many running backs available. Does that kind of, in a way, kind of work in the Giants' favor, that they can kind of dangle the situation to Saquon to say, well, sure, arguably one of the best of those. There's still a lot of guys out there that we can go after. Josh Jacobs, I didn't even throw him into the mix. Arguably one of the best as well. That there's a potential recovery operation, then we find an alternative.
Yeah, and like Justin said earlier, it's Giants fans love Saquon, and we just want what's best for him. He's been with us, you know, for so long, and he lit up everything with Penn State. One real good season that he's been able to enjoy in the time he's been here. Let's wish him well and give him an opportunity to be great. I mean, I don't want to say he's on a trajectory for a Hall of Fame career, but he could be. He's only 27. He's still got something left. I mean, I know he's, you know, the lifespan of running backs is not what it used to be, but let's give him an opportunity to you know, say go out in a blaze of glory, but give him a chance to win. Houston is prime. I mean, they're ready. They're I think that the running back spot is something that will solidify them as real contenders. Definitely ahead of Jacksonville if Saquon ended up there in the South. But I don't think anybody in Giants world would be, you know, upset if Saquon is making a championship game next year with a different team. We just want what's best for him and give him that chance to get the kind of kudos he deserves.
So. Yeah. And if anything, I'm really interested of what he gets in the open market, because that's been the conversation over the last couple of years of, you know, the value of running backs. You know, Tony Pollard didn't even get a chance to hit the open market last year. Josh Jacobs didn't get a chance to hit the open market. So, like you guys said, there's all these running backs now that could be entering at the same time where they've been franchise because the franchise tag is cheaper than the alternative of giving them the long-term extension, right? So now that you have some of these running backs that are hitting the open market, for myself, I'm interested to see what he's going to get on the open market. I think he deserves that opportunity. And then also the Giants, you know, the Giants will now, like, we'll kind of see who's right, you know, with the, you know, kind of, you know, the old Western, you know, you're at that shooting range, right? Where it's like Joe Shane's holding his cards of being like, I think you're worth this, and Saquon Barkley thinks that he's worth something else. We're going to see who's right. And of course, there's still a chance that even if Barkley hits the open market, that they could, you know, they could find their way back to each other.
What do you think he's worth, Joe? What do you see? 3 years, 30?
It would have to be a 2 year deal with a clear out after three. And I'm even iffy. Again, I'm iffy on it because I come from a little bit of a standpoint that maybe isn't like the majority, where I just don't think right now at where the Giants are with all the holes that they have, I just don't view allocating $10 million to a running back for more than 1 year or 2 years. I don't view that as worth it. I mean, even this past year, because I get it, he's the superstar, and hey, the Giants don't have a lot of threats on offense, so you have to prepare for Saquon Barkley. But there hasn't been, outside of 2022, which was awesome, there hasn't been productive seasons. And even 2022 wasn't extremely efficient. A lot of that was kind of based on volume. You know, they didn't have an explosive passing game in 2022, so a lot of it was giving Saquon Barkley the rock, giving Saquon Barkley the rock. So it wasn't even overly efficient. It was just the volume was a lot, and he took advantage of that. So there, if we've had productive years of Saquon Barkley, then I'm like, yeah, you know, let's get that that 30 for 3 done, and I feel good about it. But I really don't feel comfortable paying anybody $10 million if they're not going to be a productive player. And that could not even be his fault. It could be that they don't even have a good, they don't have a good offensive line. And I think that's even more evidence to show that you got to get that line right first and then, you know, get your, you know, your skill position, especially to address that running back spot.
I'll throw this without Darren. Whoever wants to jump in on it, I look at the teams who are in the same position as us with running backs walking away. Derrick Henry, Nick Spiller comes in there. He's in the second year, really efficient running back. The Cowboys have got two there. If Pollard is to move off, saw some bright spots from some of the Raiders, younger running backs. You look at us, and I suggest we don't have anybody. We don't really have anybody that can, like, Matt Breida essentially is the backup for, you know, to come in and take the hard yards where Saquon needs a breather. And Gray really hasn't materialized. I think we were all quite excited when we drafted Gray in the later rounds last year, but we didn't really see a lot last year. Obviously, he was in more special teams than anything. We don't really have anybody that we're looking to the future at the moment and saying, okay, if Saquon is to go, so he can carry the load. We are going to find ourselves, I would believe, having to go into this free agency market and try to find an alternative running back. Even if Saquon has to stay, we need to find a better backup. And you spoke about it with Bobby Tennessee. We're so reliant on Saquon. There's nothing in the background that helps us whatsoever.
Right. Right. I think free agency, the draft, I think there's plenty of opportunities. You mentioned the amount of running backs that are entering free agency. That's where I think it helps the Giants, that they're going to have the top guys that are going to get theirs, and they're, you know, they're going to get their back, but then you're going to have those teams going after the top guys, where I think hopefully in free agency maybe there'll be some bargain guys that the Giants could get, and then obviously I hope that they're drafting one as well.
Well, I think it's time to move on. We've got 12 minutes on Saquon. We're doing quite well. Let's move on to Daniel Jones. I've reflected on some of your podcasts, some brilliant podcasts with Bobby over the course of the season, in particular when we went on that little small run, Justin, with the Tommy DeVito storyline and all the razzmatazz that came with that. But by and large, most Giants fans in the background were saying, whilst it's enjoyable and we're winning a couple of games, this is going to impact us in the long run. And even it kind of summed up week 18. We go and beat the Eagles. We can't seem to beat the Eagles. We finally get off the slide and beat them. And yeah, it kind of, in a way, it kind of makes it worse in a sense, because the Chargers don't win. We swap places with them. It feels like we're in a awkward spot at six. Like, and most years you'd say that's not a bad spot to be in, as quarterbacks coming, but because of the nature of Commanders at two, Patriots at three, the Bears are a given for the quarterback. We may not even find the appropriate quarterback that we want. Are we going to? It doesn't sound like Joe Shane is comfortable moving up. That for me would have to happen in the next fortnight for that to be a realistic piece. Would you run with that? You think that's a fair reflection?
Yeah, and I think I was reading Pat Leonard after the, you know, after the, actually the main press conference, and I actually think, like, if you followed, and I like doing this, you just scroll on Twitter and you're updating Twitter whenever they're not live streaming a press conference, or whenever you're waiting for free agency news or something, we're just on Twitter and we're just scrolling, waiting for the next update from a beat reporter. So I actually didn't find that Joe Shane's main press conference that we actually got anything, but it was when he was talking on the side to the reporters, and then he did that fan Q&A that was live on YouTube, the Giants channel. That's where I found that we got a lot of the more substantial stuff. And one of the things that Pat Leonard wrote in his article recently, when Joe Shane was on the side with the reporters, is that did get the sense that Joe Shane is not comfortable trading up right now, because number one, you don't necessarily know where those top three teams are going to go, because they very well, like, those three teams that need a quarterback at the top, one of them, you know, maybe even the Commanders and the Patriots, they may decide that they may not want that quarterback. I think that's unlikely, but at this stage of the game, if you're Joe Shane and the Giants, it's still a waiting game, and I think you're still kind of making calls and maybe fielding some situations out. And also, Joe Shane is a very big believer. Joe Shane and the Giants, they are very big believers on, Dave Gettleman would call it getting your hands on guys and meeting with them. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. If you look at the list of top 30 visits that the Giants have had the last two draft classes under Joe Shane, basically all of those top 30 picks, I think there's one or two guys that's an exception here. I think Eric Eric Gray may not even be an exception, but even like Trey Hawkins, who came from that small school last year from Old Dominion, that fifth or sixth round pick, he was a top 30 visit that the Giants had, you know, even coming from that small school. So usually if you see that Joe Shane and the Giants, if they have a top 30 visit with the player, odds are they may draft that player because they really like getting to know these guys over the last 2 years. And I don't necessarily know that was the same case under Dave Gettleman. It wasn't as much of a lock as it is with Joe Shane. And I don't know. Like, I don't think they've had it. They've started these top 30 visits yet. They're just starting to meet with these guys at the combine. So by the time that we see the trade ups happen in the NFL, it's early March, middle of March, right? I don't know if the Giants and Joe Shane are going to feel comfortable enough in one or two quarterbacks that they would be fine for trading up for. And are they comfortable and knowing what the roadmap is going to look like in the top three? Those are the two big things. And I don't think they're going to have that answer by early March. Maybe they do, and maybe things change. But Joe Shane kind of hinted that as of now, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, a couple of things stuck out to me over the last day or two. I mean, we had Joe Shane saying we have to consider Daniel Jones' injury history as we plan for 2024. There's your first warning sign. Then it's when he discussed that there's quarterback talent later on in the draft. There's your second thing. And then I saw Mike Garofalo saying that there's a better than 75% chance the Giants take a quarterback in round one. So I don't know what the feelers are out there in Indianapolis or what tells Joe Shane is given away. But and then when you think about this, we're going into year three. Are Dable and Shane collectively confident in Mr. Jones? And because their stake and their third year livelihood is based on a guy who's not been the hardiest injury wise the last little while. So
right.
Yeah, we'll see how that all plays out.
So we were talking to a number of different beat writers at Super Bowl, and it came up, and I thought it was a very valid point. Does Shane need to get a quarterback in the sense that if we don't have a really productive 2024 season, he's got an argument to go to John Mara at the end of the season, whether it's a combination of him and David or just an individual conversation to say, just drafted a quarterback. It's a learning curve. You've got to give me the opportunity to develop him or allow Brian Daboll to develop him. Where if we don't take a quarterback and we are relying on Daniel Jones throughout the course of the season, and whether he plays fully or not, depending on injury concerns, and it isn't a successful season, they don't really have much of a rationale to go to the head coach and say, for another reason for a season, and I'll show this nugget in there because it's going to be there. We all know the conversation. If we get off to a bad start, October, yeah, November, the Bill Belichick narrative is only going to kick off, and it's only going to get even more heightened as the season goes on.
Yeah, and a lot of what really stunk about this season is you're 2-8. Jones tears his ACL, and I'm sitting there and like, this is really bad. This is really, really bad. And I was thinking to myself, even in week 10, week 11, I was like, if this continues to get worse in 2023. And this is after going to the playoffs and winning a playoff game. I was like, if this continues to get worse and this bad, because it was so, the Giants offense was the worst. It was the Jets, it was the Steelers, it was the Patriots, and it was the Giants. And the Giants were arguably worse than all of them at one point of the year when they were 2-8. And then it was, Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito that kind of come in and, quote unquote, saved the day. I was really sitting there being like, I want Brian Daboll to survive this. I think he should survive this. And I think obviously Joe Shane. But I was like, if they go 2-15, the noise is going to get louder. And if they start this year, especially without a quarterback, without that Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or even if they take like a second rounder, let's just say, if they without that rookie quarterback kind of behind them, and they have a similar start, which I don't think they will, and I hope they don't. But if they have a similar start to the year, a similar September and October, a lot of fans may say, oh, yeah, Dable's here. And even John Mara himself may say, you know what, I still do think, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are the guys to lead the team, and I'm going to be patient with them, and I'm going to give them another year, even no matter how this year goes. But you say all this now in the offseason, but then you get to it, and you get in the nitty-gritty of it, and you see how bad it is, and things may change. So I am definitely scared of that, and I'm scared of I don't think that they will, because I think that they want to stick to their process. I think they want to stick to their timeline that they have in mind. But it definitely is in the back of my mind as a fan if Joe Shane and Brian Daboll may make certain decisions to save face, save their jobs, feel like, oh, well, even though this season went bad, I have this rookie quarterback that I need to develop. Let me develop him. And then it's like, okay, well, you deserve that right. So, but that's not a lock that they walk away from this draft with a quarterback, right? It's not a lock. And that's the tricky thing, that tricky dynamic that they have right now.
Kieran, quick one for you. We all know, whether you're just out of the world or in the States, John Mara hates half-empty stadiums and opposing fans coming into the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That, we got that towards the end of the season. If we saw it repeated that next year, it kind of goes into the bigger storyline for him as opposed to just focusing on head coaching and GMs, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's Mara can't afford to have it to be a situation where it's even a three and out. I mean, we had so many two and outs the last, 10 years? You know, the last thing he wants is to stare, you know, kind of failure in the face with Shane and Daboll. So I think that they're going to get, I believe they're going to get a year four regardless of
I agree.
How this year goes. But that's not to say that, you know, we're going to accept another 5-12. This draft is going to be crucial because Shane has not had a standout draft. He has not had a home run hit. He has not had somebody who's, you know, an absolute knockout. You know, we thought Kayvon might be that. I don't want to go into the Evan Neal stuff, but, you know, we had some, you know, I don't want to say misses, but people who we thought might be better than they are. And I don't think Mara, you know, and Shane doesn't want to go strike three on year three of this draft. So a lot riding on it, but I don't think it's going to be fatal for them. I do think they get year four regardless, but it's going to be tight. It's going to be real tight.
And regardless of quarterback, you bring up a great point, because regardless of quarterback, they just need better football players, right? And as you know, we cover the NFL, and this was like the first year I do some stuff. You know, I work for John Boy Media, and you know, I've done some like JM football stuff this year, and I've tried to cover the NFL a little bit more this year and branch out outside of just the Giants. And man, the main thing that I learned just by watching the rest of the NFL is, man, you look at like these playoff teams, especially the teams that made it to the divisional round, and the Lions, the Ravens, the Chiefs, the 49ers, even the Cowboys, right? You look up and down, and at every single spot and every single position group, there are all pro caliber players there. I mean, you look at the 49ers, you have Trent Williams, future Hall of Fame left tackle. You have two really good wide receivers. You have the all pro running back. You have Bosa, you have Fred Warner. You have a really good secondary, even though maybe none of them are all pros. I mean, you know, look at any of those teams and go position group by position group and be like, are they high caliber, nearly all pro players at almost every single position group? And the answer is yes. And the Giants just don't have that up and down right now. I think they have Andrew Thomas, and I think they have Dexter Lawrence that are those all pro caliber players. And I think they have other good players at other spots like Okereke, okay, and hopefully they bring McKinney back. But I don't view those guys as all pro players, for unbiased. I don't view them as all pro players. I view them as necessary pieces. So really, that this draft class is so key, along with the formation of the younger draft of the other draft classes. Kayvon in a new system that isn't Wink Martindale, that allows guys to get after the quarterback a little bit more. It'll be a huge year three for him. Deontay Banks in year two. Can you be a starting cornerback one of the NFL? And then this draft class, especially with the draft capital that you have, another four picks in the top 100, can you get, you know, one to two really, like, really, really good football players out of that? And that's the priority.
And speaking of McKinney, I mean, that'll kind of segue us onto the free agent discussion. I know Bobby has talked about 4 years, 64 for McKinney. We think that's going to happen. What else do we see? You know, kind of a couple of players that we think might be brought back, Dory Jackson, people like that. Who do we think they're going to bring back, and who do you think we could grab that's out there with that extra, whatever it is, 32 mil?
Yeah, I mean, I hope McKinney is the priority for the team. I think he's going to get a contract that is going to pay him. You know, he's young, and I inevitably feel like he does deserve it. I kind of compared it to the Justin Simmons contract as well, because it's not just the It's not just the years and the, you know, the whole dollar value. It's the guaranteed years and then the guaranteed money. That's the stuff that's really important. So I hopefully think if they give McKinney three guaranteed years, I hope that he kind of will rationally take that, come back, even if it's not Derwin James and Minkah Fitzpatrick money. So that's Minkah. That's Xavier McKinney. Some of the other free agents on top of my head. He mentioned Adoree Jackson. Adoree had a kind of down year, kind of had a bad year, and it kind of felt like at the end of it, he kind of sold out. So I would almost rather go after a little bit more bargain hunting, somebody who's a little bit younger, you know, maybe give him a 2-year deal. You know, the second year is maybe a little fluff, and this year's guaranteed and everything like that, and have a younger guy in here, maybe a little bit more familiar with Shane Bowen. I'm perfectly fine with that. So, Jahad Ward, no. Isaiah Simmons, no. I actually have the list of impending free agents in a text message. But
I wonder if Kavika Mitchell's out there.
Kavika. I brought up that name to license plate guy the other day when talking about that softball game, and he was like, yeah, he'll be there. I'm like, oh, that's such a random name from 07. An interesting one is A'shaun Robinson, the interior defensive lineman. Yeah. It's actually Joe Shane's comments at the combine about talking about edge rushers and how Shane Bowen's defense is maybe going to put a little bit more reliance on these edge rushers on early downs instead of a lot of big interior defensive linemen that you saw. You saw a good amount of 2-3 interior defensive lineman sets on first and second down for the Giants over the last 2 years. And I think you're going to start to see more, maybe 1-2 interior defensive lineman sets on early downs. And then you're going to see the pass rushers, basically 2-3 outside linebackers, maybe on the field at all times for Shane Bowen. So I think that leaves A'shaun Robinson in an interesting spot, especially as these interior defensive linemen, they're getting paid a little bit of money. And then there's like Ben Bredesen, who should be brought back as depth. And I mentioned Simmons, Jahad Ward, he's a Wink Martindale guy. And like Matt Breida, Darnay Holmes. So the Giants don't really have like a lot of, besides McKinney and Saquon, they don't have like a lot of huge big names like, you know, those impending free agents. Yes. Well, you mentioned other names though that we could go after. That's what you mentioned. I don't have any go to guys. Obviously, and Wonu from the Patriots as like this tackle slash guard. A lot of people call him guard. I have to really look into it if the Giants do sign him. I obviously interested with him because, yeah, I would love good foundational pieces on the offensive line for the Giants. And that if there's really with this cap allocation, with the cap increase, if they want to go a little bit big fish hunting for an offensive lineman, whether that be a tackle or whether that be a guard, I'm all for it. The Giants kind of need both of those spots, right? And then even L'Jarius Sneed, very interested to see what happens with him with the Chiefs. That's really big game hunting. If you want to have a secondary of Deontay Banks and L'Jarius Sneed, mm-hmm. and really, I mean, that's you know, you're going fishing for Charlie Tuna there. You know, you're gonna have to pay him good. But I just think he's that good. He followed wide receiver ones all year, and I'm always of the mentality of you can make your strength even a bigger strength. And I think Bowen's defense having multiple good corners is really important.
Yeah. And that secondary can always use help.
Oh yeah, it is.
Justin, a quick one. If there is no quarterback 6, and we do remain at 6, is it a given it's a wide receiver? Bear in mind, T. Higgins has just been tagged, and he was kind of the marquee wide receiver going into free agency. You look around the other availability, Pittman in Indianapolis, maybe, but again, I have any reservations whether he could be really that effective in, you know, coming into the Giants. Is it a case that we would have to go marquee number one selection with a wide receiver if we assume we're going to work on the base that Daniel Jones is the QB?
You know, we talked to somebody at the Senior Bowl, you know, who's you know, somewhat close to the Giants, and you know, we're like, oh yeah, you know, it's kind of like the same thing. And we even asked about like Evan Neal, like, oh, you know, is the investment of Evan Neal basically a lock that the Giants won't go tackle in round 1 or 2? Or I think Bobby framed it as like round 2 or 3, and they said round 2 or 3, they could go tackle round 1. So I don't necessarily think it's a lock that they're going to go wide receiver 6, even though I think like Malik Nabers, if Malik Nabers is on the board, if Odunze is on, I think those players could be the best players available. But also Joe Shane could subscribe to the thought of, you know, kind of positional value. And even the wide receiver, I think, is a position that's very valuable, getting that alpha number one stud. I think that is invaluable. But he could subscribe to the theory of, well, you know what? Look at the depth of wide receiver. Look at how many names that we have that have a ground that have a round one or round two grade at wide receiver. So, hey, we could take a premium position at tackle at six and then go on to picks 39 and 70 and then get your receiver there and maybe even double dip at receiver. So I don't know where, you know, I'm open to a lot of different things. I'm less happy and thrilled about, oh yeah, left tackle can just snap his fingers and go over to right tackle. When we drafted Evan Neal, that was cool. But now that, you know, we went through the Evan Neal experiment, maybe we're a little bit more apprehensive to that now. So I would lean like wide receiver, but based on, you know, maybe Joe Shane's thinking positional value wise, get that premium position of tackle, and then you can get your wide receivers kind of later in the draft, or even trading back is a possibility too. But of course, again, with trading up, it takes two to tango to do that. If you want to trade back, and then we're talking about a lot of a wealth of positions open up, where there's some other edge rushers in this draft, and then other positions open up outside that top 10, then there's a conversation to be had there too.
Carry on a quick one for you in terms of wide receivers. Like Kadarius Toney, obviously, is a story in itself, and he wasn't used quite a lot in the fourth season. I think we all recognize now the reason behind that. Jalen Hyatt is a third-round pick, but we only kind of saw the benefits of him towards the latter stages of the season. And you see these other wide receivers come into the league, and we see, like, this year with the Rams and various different players with their second-round third pick, and they go in and make an immediate impact. And we spoke about this time and time again. Why are we always a team that it just tends to kind of gradually bring these players and transition them into the team, as opposed to the other teams who just put them in immediately? I recognize they have to understand the schemes and all that comes with that, different dynamics, different team. But we always seem to be lagging behind when we bring in a wide receiver in terms of when we're going to give them their true opportunity. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, we had Plaxico back in, was that 15, 16 years ago? And, you know, even with the Super Bowls, we had Steve Smith, Mario Manningham, I wouldn't call them, you know, superstars. I think we all hoped that Jalen Hyatt would light it up. I mean, he showed flashes, but he's just not. He's a tier, I don't want to call him a tier two or a tier three, but he's not a tier one wide receiver. He's an excellent player, but he's not that guy. I don't know. It's a great question. We just, it's linked to the quarterback play. I just don't. It's baffling that we just seem to miss on that position lately. Odell is really the last superstar we had at that position, and that star fizzled pretty quickly. But if Nabers or Odunze, I really like Odunze. I mean, I'm a huge college football fan, and I loved his game at Washington. He's the kind of guy you want out there, big, almost like a Mike Evans frame. He's 6'3". Mm-hmm. You know, he's at that Mike Evans frame, 230, 235, big and stocky. He'll go up there, and he won't be intimidated. I would not be disappointed or upset if we took Odunze at six and kind of rolled the dice on a quarterback in rounds two or three. But we need, you know, like Justin said earlier, we need premium players at the premium positions. Whether that be, you know, we have a left tackle, we've got an all star left tackle. We need a solid right tackle. We need to start working again on the linebacker crew. And if Lejarius Sneed or another, you know, free agent corner or safety's out there, let's go get him, because we have to solidify the main kind of important spots. And running back has become a position. Obviously, we all know it's not the star name anymore. It's let's see who we can get for, you know, dollars on or cents on the dollar. Let's see who we can pick up in round six or seven, run him into the ground and get as much as we can out of him. So I would really love Odunze at six. I would love a quarterback in the first round, but you know, we're going to be playing the guessing game for a couple more weeks. But if that doesn't happen, I'll take a skill position, and then let's work on the line in two and three.
Yeah. Please. I just want to close out on this question, and we probably should have captured it when we spoke with Shane and Dable. And it was referring to the great podcast you did with Ryan Dunleavy last week, Justin, and he's got into the devil of the detail around what happened with the relationship building between Dable, Wink, and obviously Kafka. And it looked like he raised a real great point that it wasn't so much about the lateral move if Kafka was to go to Seattle. It was about the opportunity to maintain play calling, which looks like potentially he could lose next season. It feels like everybody's falling in with Dable, but then you get the report this week, which it's hard to really read into because it's the end of the season. People are filling in reports. I wonder, are they filling them in just to get out of the building? They don't necessarily really mean what they put down. But again, it's to your point, if we have a bad start to the season, do people circle the wagons in terms of how they feel about Brian Dable in particular?
Oh, yeah. I think that will happen. And I think that's why September and October, and I've been such a proponent of, like, especially as we, you know, even like in the, you know, having a team-centered podcast, it's like, just give me 1-0. Give me 1-0. Like, how awesome it is to win week one and lose week one. Like, even if you win week one, right, and you get off to somewhat of a fast start, even if you have a lull in the middle, it gives you a little bit of forgiveness, right, versus it's the middle of October and your season's over. You know, and that stinks. So it's really just important for them to get off to that fast start. You know, and you mentioned the complexities that, you know, are with Kafka, Dable, and then even when Wink was going after the door and those Wilkins brothers. Certainly, as time goes on, and the more that, you know, I'm reflecting on it, I'm certainly being like, you know what, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, where I think there's Wink Martindale and his camp, and also the Wilkins brothers. I think they had a little bit of loose lips of they're saying what they want to say to reporters, and then that's being reported as stories, and that's being put out. But then you also have people putting out, you know, pro Giants pieces and pro Dable pieces, and then it paints another story in another light. And again, I think the story is somewhere in the middle, where I think Brian Dable could be at times a difficult person to work with. I think he is an intense person to work with his staff. It's very funny when you look at that NFLPA, the NFL Players Association players report card that comes out this week and says that, oh, the players love Brian Dable. They gave him that like A- or A grade. And they said that, oh, he's good with our time. And he ranked as like, I think like the 13th head coach in terms of going, like listening to his players. Like he could hear out the players. And that was the case from when he was hired, that we knew that he was going to be a players coach and kind of run like this country club. What we didn't know is that he was going to be really intense with his coaching staff. Seems like Wink Martindale was one of the ones to really only have a major problem with it. And I think the issue with Mike Kafka isn't necessarily, I guess, how Brian Dable treats him. It's that he wants to be the play caller, because he wants to be on a track to be a head coach, and he knows the track to being a head coach in today's game is being a young, up-and-coming offensive play caller. Like, that's just the track. The Giants are doing a very good job of a little bit of PR. Joe Shane did it, where it's like, we value Mike Kafka, and what we're doing is we're grooming Mike Kafka to be a head coach. And I think what they're saying is like, oh, you know, not necessarily with the play calling, but we're just going to groom Mike Kafka into a really good leader. So I think that's kind of good PR, and that's good stuff by the Giants there, especially by making him the assistant head coach. So yeah, hey, at the end of the day, if they win, Mike Kafka is going to go on and he's going to get a head coaching job next offseason. I'm rooting for that. I'm rooting for that, because if he goes on and gets a coaching job, and if he goes on and he gets a promotion, then that means that the Giants had a good year. I'm rooting for all of that to happen. And I think the stories will go away that Brian Dable is a psychopath and that he's crazy to work with if they win. But if they lose, then all of that stuff will kind of resurface again. And that's exactly what happened this year. I do think some of the tension happened in 2022 with Wink and Dable, but they won and they were able to make it work. And it was awesome. And then when they started losing, that's when the bad stuff kind of started.
Kieran, I left a minute for your two psychopaths here to talk about a bit of NASCAR. Not for me. I'll let you show it. I'll show it out to you.
You'd say, well, you know, Justin, we're going out to an Irish audience primarily. I wanted to talk about the end of the Atlanta 400 real quick. I know, yeah. I know you and Bobby are big NASCAR fans. I think the next platform we're looking at is the Irish NASCAR show. I'm going to pitch it to Brian later on and see if we can get any traction on that. I just want you to know there are people, I do know a couple of people in Ireland that do like NASCAR, so I want to put that out there. So I wanted to give a big plug too to Talking Giants, your number one stop for Giants information and Giants content. Justin, really appreciate you coming on today. It was great. Thank you for your time, and let's do it again.
Yeah, thank you, fellas. Anytime. Appreciate you.